chromosomes. Little strands of nucleic acids and proteins are the fundamental genetic instructions that tell us who we are at birth. Most people are born with 46 chromosomes, but each year in the United States, about 6,000 people are born with an extra chromosome, making them a person with Down syndrome. If you've ever encountered someone with Down syndrome, you know that they are some of the kindest, most joyful people you will ever meet. They truly have something extra. My name is Lisa Nichols, and I have spent the last 24 years as both the CEO of Technology Partners and as the mother to Allie. Allie has something extra in every sense of the word. I have been blessed to be by her side as she impacts everyone she meets. Through these two important roles as CEO and mother to Allie, I have witnessed countless life lessons that have fundamentally changed the way I look at the world. While you may not have an extra chromosome, every leader has something extra that defines who you are. Join me as I explore the something extra in leaders from all walks of life and discover how that difference in each of them has made a difference in their companies, their families, their communities, and in themselves. I'm thrilled to have Lloyd Reeb on the show today. Lloyd is an author, speaker, and a founding partner of the Halftime Institute. If you like this episode today, please go to Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen and leave us a 5-star rating. Lloyd, I have been looking forward to this interview with you, this episode of the Something Extra podcast now for weeks. I am so, so happy that we were able to make this happen. And I know how busy you are. So I just want to say thank you so much for making the time to be on the show today.
Oh, gosh, you're welcome. I just love what you're doing, love the impact you're having in many people's lives, and hope that together, as we just share our ideas, that there are some that are a blessing to the people that chime in each time.
Absolutely. That's my hope as well, Lloyd. So you and I just met recently. We met about a year ago. Greg and I were attending a conference, and you spoke at this conference. And then we were recently reacquainted through our good friend, Chris Crane, who I know you believe like I do. He is just one of the most amazing human beings, such a humble servant. And, you know, I would say, Lloyd, and you might say this as well, I think the second half of his life is the best half. He is impacting millions of children right now through his organization, Edify. But I've been a fan of Halftime for a very long time. I read Bob Buford's book, Halftime, years ago. I remember a leader here in St. Louis spoke about Halftime, and he had been an executive of a major corporation, Fortune 500 company here, and had retired, but then really didn't do very well with retiring. He, as my friend Kim Blanchard said, he didn't retire, he refired. And decided that he was going to do something more significant, you know, in his second half. So I have been just a really, you know, excited for this conversation. I've had several friends. You might remember my friend Scott Keel went through the Halftime Institute. Scott's a very dear friend of mine. I'm just excited. And like you said, if we can say some things that might help some people today, I know that's my goal and it is yours too. But tell me, I know that you and Linda live on Lake Norman in North Carolina, but I don't think you grew up in North Carolina, did you?
No, you know, I grew up in the Northeast in Philadelphia. And when it was time to go to university, my mom said, well, what if you go back to Montreal, where she was born? And she had a brother teaching in the med school at McGill University in Montreal. And so I thought, well, you know, I'm kind of a B student. I'm not so sure I'll get into McGill, but with a good recommendation from my uncle, I got into McGill University. And so that took me to Montreal. And then I met Linda. We've been married 40 years already, if you can believe it, Lisa. So I tell people I married her when she was 12 because, you know, she she doesn't look like 60, but
yeah,
I certainly do, right? Yeah, so that went fast. And I started developing real estate there, and that went well. And God chose to bless our business. So it gave us financial freedom in our early 30s. And so we stopped and pushed the pause button and asked, okay, what do we do now? And what's interesting is once you have a measure of freedom in your life, then you have to choose. how you invest your time, how you spend the 168 hours a week that we've been given. And it's funny because even if you don't want to choose, you end up choosing. Even if I just stayed focused on building wealth and growing our net worth and comfort and luxuries of life, it would be a choice. And so I realized that whether I like it or not, I have to stop and think, what do I really want in life? And as a result, what are the primary loyalties of my life and how am I going to invest myself?
Yeah, and we'll talk about this, Lloyd, but a lot of it is figuring out your values. What is it that you value? What are your priorities? And to your point, what do you want your legacy to be? And you said, you know, is it going to be all these buildings? But I want to go back because you call yourself a recovering real estate developer, which I think is really funny. I read you bought your first piece of land when you were a teenager and your dad was your banker. So I want to know, what kind of interest rate did you pay?
Interest rates were high at the time. And I don't think he charged me that, but he charged me, you know, well above what the savings rate was. So, you know, I had to get out and mow lawns and shovel driveways. And you know, I was 14. And, you know, I asked him sometimes, why was I so focused on investing and interested in real estate as a teenager? And he can't explain it. My brothers aren't interested in the same things. They're actually quite smart, very intellectual, and I just wasn't. But for some reason, I loved the idea of building and owning things. So then I bought, when I got out of McGill, I bought 18 acres. And at 21, I started my first subdivision. So those things gave me a head start. But, you know, I could have easily gotten stuck in that rut of just acquiring, growing, building. And I remember someone early in my life asking me some very profound questions. One was, what is all your winning costing you? It's interesting that when we think about the wins in our life, very often we don't think about what the costs are. And so it started to dawn on me that I was going to pay a price over the long haul if I just stayed heads down, fully, you know, absorbed in creating wealth. And then I had the experience because we were developers, my business partner and I were developing retirement communities. I had the privilege of looking at the lives of people late in life. And even in my mid to late 20s, I could see that the people in our seniors complexes bifurcated into two groups. The group on the one hand that still thought it was all about them and became miserable and focused on their ailments and disillusioned at life. And this other group, like Ken Blanchard, like you mentioned him earlier in our conversation, you know, he's 81 or 82 now, and he wakes up in the morning and it's just not about him. It's about everybody else. And when you're with him, you can tell his life is about giving and serving and leading and adding value. And it's so funny, he might have ailments, but he doesn't talk about them. You just hear joy and gratefulness bubbling out of him, right? And so I realized that I was confronted with deciding who I was going to be when I grew up. Was I going to be the person who was self-absorbed and became bitter with life and somewhat disillusioned? Or was I going to become someone who was really about others?
Yeah. Oh, that is so good. That's so good. Yeah. I think Ken, I want to say he's like 84 or something like that now. And he told me, he said, I have no intention of stopping. You know, I mean, he is living the second half of his life with great gusto. And I find that so refreshing.
And Lisa, you mentioned the sort of a recovering real estate developer that I often say. And that is because, you know, if you've loved something in the first season of your life, you can become addicted to it, right? And I loved real estate and I still love it. I like our business. We get to care for grandmas and grandpas, and our buildings are full because we do care, because we're compassionate and provide good care to them. But the recovery part was learning to get beyond that, where my identity didn't need to be wrapped around being a successful real estate developer, where I was willing to serve and show up with a towel over my arm in a certain sense, right? So the recovery part is growing from the inside to be somebody different than just needing the affirmation and needing the constant kudos of winning in that particular arena.
Yeah, that is so good, Lloyd. Well, you know, you said you were so focused on your wealth, you had metrics for what you felt like were winning, but you had a mentor, you know, and we already mentioned him, Bob Buford, who unfortunately is not with us any longer, but what an amazing, I think he, in his vocational life, right, prior to halftime, Lloyd, wasn't he in Comcast Cable, or he was in the cable industry or something like that, I believe, if I remember right.
Yeah, that's right. He built a big cable company and sold it. But he went through this halftime season, this pause in life to reflect on who you are in his 50s. And then ran a parallel career for a long time, maybe 15 years, where he kept the company, but he kept his one foot in that arena and one foot in the giving back arena. And I remember, Lisa, when I was trying to think this through, thinking that you had to choose, are you going to make money or make a difference? And that's a false choice. I see some of the biggest impact in our country and in our world happening very often on for-profit platforms. And I could share story after story of people who have built great enterprises that are for profit, but they use it as a ministry. And so don't think that when you come to a season where you stop and think about, okay, what is this all about? What do I consider value? What is my purpose and calling on this planet? You know, keep that separate from the platform that you use, because you may end up with a nonprofit platform or for-profit platform, or more likely a portfolio or a blend of them, right? Kind of like your journey. You have a for-profit piece, and this is part of your impact platform, right, that you've built alongside of that. And you might have two or three others, Lisa, before long, right? And that's just okay, because it's the same Lisa with the same calling and the same personality showing up in different venues to produce the kind of human transformation you care the most about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And to your point, and I think that's one of the myths, right, Lloyd, that a lot of people think, well, I have to sell my business. You know, I have to get out of whatever it is that I'm doing so I can make an impact. Well, sometimes I believe, you know, I've got a good friend, you may know this name, but Dennis Muhlenberg was the former CEO for Boeing. And I'll never forget him one time just saying, you know, that work is just a vehicle for more relationships.
Yeah, influence and contribution, right?
Yeah, exactly. So we'll kind of talk about some of those myths, some more of those myths. Bob really did believe, and I think this is good news. This is really good news, Lloyd, that the second half of your life could be better than the first. And I think that's good news. You know, that's one thing Ken said. He said, you know, I want to live till the end of my life with gusto. And he said, it's not even that 50-year-old and older. He said, I see some 20 and 30-year-olds kind of giving up and saying the best is behind me. No, let's have the attitude that the best is yet to come. In fact, it can be even richer because you've taken all of the learnings in that first half, right? And you're putting them in the second half to make even a bigger impact. So, you know, I think that is so good. One of the things you talk about a lot, Lloyd, is having a purpose statement. And I see this, and you probably do too. I see a lot of young people that seem like they're wandering without purpose. When you're coaching somebody, Lloyd, how would you even help them start? What would the genesis of that purpose statement look like? How would someone even start crafting that for themselves?
There are three kind of reasons why people find it hard to really get clear on their purpose. One is they don't have a process that they can use, like you're referring to. Secondly, they don't have some disciplines in life in order to get free from all the busyness and clutter, because it takes some time and it takes some reflection, even some experimenting to find your purpose on this planet. And then thirdly, they don't have a simple pathway to get started. So they end up in a semi-overpaying job that's underfulfilling, and they come home and their life is filled with busyness and they feel sloppy busy. And when you don't have clarity around your purpose, you become sloppy busy. And this is what Bob Buford gave to us, was some rigor to try to get clear on who you are and what you care about, get free from the clutter, the low value stuff, and then get going, get started and experiment, test your way into clarity. So if you think about it this way, get clear, get free, and get going. That's just a simple vernacular way to take a complex transition in your life or journey towards significance and turn it into common language. So the clarity piece is where you start. because you can't create margin in your life. You can't create excess capacity, time, or money if you don't know what you care about, if you don't know what your purpose is, you don't know what to cut out. But once you do gain some clarity about who you are and your mission statement or purpose, then you can start to look through the commitments you have and determine which ones are low value relative to those and eliminate them so that you have more time to focus on the few things that really matter. And then once you have that time and that clarity, you can start to look for people who are doing what you would like to do and begin to design the context or the platform that you should serve in. So the starting place is more akin to archaeology than architecture. It's about asking, who am I? What are my strengths? What are my passions? When have I been at my very best in life? What were the circumstances? When was I most at peace? Perhaps what was the most painful experiences of my life and how have those shaped me? Because very often the purpose for your future is aligned with the pain of your past. And sometimes you discover that, you know, one of my friends that I've coached through halftime, his mom went blind. And after he sold his company, he built an enterprise that today employs 550 sight impaired people. And it's a huge joy because it's a gift in a sense as a legacy to his mom. He gets to see people who otherwise might be sitting home in isolation, not only having meaningful work, but a community where they belong and where it's safe and where they're understood. And I mean, there's just, imagine being one of the largest employers of sight impaired people in the country, building on all of his experience in his first half, building a tech company to take many of the Ivy League schools into online learning long before they could see that it was such a huge value. So your mission statement generally has three pieces to it. And remember, a purpose statement is designed to be a filter to allow you to say no to most of the good things that come your way so you can say yes to the best. So the three things you want in a statement like that is, number one, what are you great at? What are your strengths? You want to build on your strengths like Peter Drucker taught us. And if you do, you'll make your weaknesses irrelevant. Secondly, what do you care the most about? What makes you mad, sad, or glad? And it doesn't have to be some really tragic human issue. It could be, you know, something like helping young married couples thrive instead of getting divorced after 7 years. It could be, in my case, helping high-capacity leaders find meaning and purpose in their life. Well, that's not really like working with people who've had burn victims that have burned over a huge percentage of their body, although there are some people who do that. And then the difference you most want to make in this world. So one lady that I coached, she's a painter. She's a great artist, but she was heads down in a sort of mid-level corporate career and wondered what would give her life more meaning and purpose in the next season. She was in her 40s. And I showed her 400 or 500 photos online of all the human experiences you can think of and asked her, pick the three or four that most grab your heart, that make you mad, sad, or glad. And among the three or four she picked was a picture of two little twin girls. Both had cleft palates. And so if you can imagine growing up, these girls were about 6 or 7 at the time. And everywhere you look, people look back at you to wonder what's wrong with your lip. And it just moved her to tears for whatever reason. That's her unique passion. So today, every portrait she paints funds a little boy or girl to have a cleft palate repaired in a poor country that otherwise couldn't afford it. And forever, that little child's going to grow up where people don't stare at them, where they don't have to hide their face or turn away. And she said to me that when she's in the middle of painting, it just very often overwhelms her. This painting is a likeness of somebody else and will provide a pathway for some little boy or girl to have their lip repaired and not have to go through that. Now, imagine what is that for you? Imagine if every single one of your listeners, Lisa, took the time to get clear, get free, and get going, and know that this is my purpose statement. These are my strengths. This is what I care about the most, and this is the difference I want to make. So for me, I'm a thought leader. That's my strength. I help people gain clarity. So my mission is to be a thought leader, mobilizing high-capacity business leaders to make a lasting impact.
My brain was just thinking about lots of things, like the story about the gentleman with his mom going blind. that there can be great joy in pain. Not that pain is joyful, but there is joy that came out of that pain, right? Because then he was then motivated and inspired to go do something about, you know, that community. I just, wow, so beautiful. You know what? We need to take a quick break and then we'll be right back with Lloyd Reeb on the Something Extra podcast.
Hey there. In a challenging business climate like this, savvy leaders look to technology to find an edge. This can mean the difference between staying ahead of the curve or playing catch up. It's time to collaborate with the highly skilled experts at Technology Partners. Our team of technologists draws upon decades of experience for your project, with each bringing a passion for solving problems and a track record of success. How can we help you overcome your biggest technology challenges? Visit technologypartners.net to book a free consultation with one of our leaders.
So welcome back, everyone, to the Something Extra podcast with Lloyd Reeb. Lloyd, we still have so much to talk about. I literally think I could talk to you for 10 hours. I am absolutely loving this and feeling like I'm getting a little coaching myself here. So I know our listeners are going to feel that too. But, you know, you kind of had your paradigm shift, I think, like 1993, something like that, 1993, 1994. And then you and Bob co-founded the Halftime Institute. And we've already kind of talked about that. I've had friends that have gone to the Halftime Institute. You know, first of all, give me the definition of halftime.
Yeah, it's a pause in a season of life where you take the time to look back and take stock of what's gone well and maybe not so well and who you've become. And just like in the game of football, you know, you take time in the locker room and you look at what went well and not went well. And then you build a strategy for the next season. And most games are won or lost in the second half. And our observation was that most people that were successful at midlife didn't have a strategy for the next season. They might be in their mid to late 40s and they look up from their desk one day and realize, oh my gosh, I'm halfway through and I've been so busy, so heads down, raising a family, you know, building houses, moving around the world with corporate transfers or whatever the case might be, running kids to soccer and dance practices and running to church and getting on another airplane and managing your money and trying to take time for date nights and stay healthy. I mean, it's just wait and have a friend or two at the same time. It's way too much stuff. But then you come to this wake up moment, you look up from your desk and say, is that all there is? And that can happen in your 30s, like it did to me. It can happen in your 40s or 50s or later. It's not so much an age thing as it's a season of life where you look up and wonder, is there more to life than this? And what was I put on this planet to do? And am I missing something? And how does this impact the people I love? And so you start a journey, but most people are not prepared for that. Peter Drucker said that today, a growing number of people are reaching a season in life where they have options about how they spend their time, and they're totally unprepared for it. Now, part of that's because of longevity. You know, the average life expectancy 100 years ago in America was 47 to 48. Today, you've got 30 bonus years. Many of us look at our previous generations and say, I really can't imagine golfing every day, although you might like golf. I can't imagine going to Naples, Florida, and picking up shells on a beach somewhere for every day for the next 30 years. You know, I'm 61 now. I've been in my second half pursuing meaningful, significant contribution to this planet for a long time. And I still can't imagine just drifting from 60 to 80 or 85. It's just not as fulfilling as fun as making a contribution in alignment with your strengths and passions and the difference that you want to make. So what Bob and I realized, there was no one making a market. There was no one helping the most talented leaders in our communities to find ways that they could give back and make a difference. If you were successful and you had some influence and maybe some freedom, you show up and try to make a difference in the community, and you're invited to do two things typically, write a check or be on a board. And very, very seldom are those our best contribution. And so we realized we needed to create a journey for people where they could be among peers to think their confusion out loud. And they needed a process. They needed peers. They needed case studies. And they probably needed coaching, some one-on-one safe conversations. Not smart answers, but reasonably good thought-provoking questions. So that's what we built 25 years ago. And now we've taken thousands of people all around the world. There are halftime movements in Africa and throughout Asia. And my books have been translated into Indonesian and et cetera, you know, and there are 500 alumni in Singapore and throughout Sweden and Europe and all over the world. So it's become a movement, not because of us, but it's just we put words around what this generation was experiencing. And people are longing for a life that has more meaning and purpose. Interestingly, you know, Lisa, there's a study done by National Geographic called Blue Zones, looking for areas of the world where people live into their hundreds. And believe it or not, having purpose, knowing your purpose, adds 7.5 years onto your life. This is what happens when you hear about people who retire at 65 and die at 67. They lose purpose. And interestingly, if you go, I spent some time with the scientist who did the Blue Zone study just last week, and they rank order the priorities in terms of what you need to do in order to live a healthy, long life, and purpose is among the top two or three. And so this is not only an important way to give back if you've been blessed, but it's also an important way to live well. And then lastly, you think about if all you wanted was to build a great family. I believe you can't build a great family without modeling for your kids and grandkids what it looks like to live for a cause bigger than yourself. I mean, you certainly don't want to just build an entitled family where everything comes our way. We make the money, we keep the money, we build more houses, we have more trips, we have better food and better wine, whatever else. And you think your grandkids are going to grow up to be healthy, productive members of society? You know, there's an expression all around the world, rags to riches to rags. And it's because people in the third generation lose the money that you made. So instead, what we're doing is we've put a cap on our lifestyle way back in 1992. We said, we're going to live at this lifestyle. We decoupled the growth of our wealth from our lifestyle. And that's almost un-American. Usually in America, if your wealth goes up, your lifestyle goes up. But we've been living at the same level now since 1992. And what it's done is it's broken the cycle of entitlement in our family. It's given us freedom from the control of stuff. And it's broken this, what I call the paradox of prosperity, that the more you gain, the more you earn, the more you accumulate, the more it owns you, and the complexity in your life goes up. So instead, we've been living, we're 28 years into a 50-year experiment to live on what God gave us in our early 30s. And we have discovered that there's so much freedom you find from the things you leave behind.
That's good. There's so much freedom from the things you leave behind. That's a good word, Lloyd. And I'm just thinking, you know, you're rich in other ways, you know, too. I mean, you know, you're storing up some eternal treasure. You're helping other people live with purpose.
And the joy goes up, right? It's really the pathway to purpose, but the pathway to joy. Yeah.
There's an old proverb that says it's more blessed to give than to receive, you know?
Yeah, and it doesn't strike you as true, and you don't read that in the Wall Street Journal, but it's empirically true. And you had asked me to explain a little bit more about the Halftime Institute. So obviously, halftime sounds like you got to be rich and maybe in your 50s or 60s, but that's really not true. So the Halftime Institute has an array of things now we do to serve people. Number one, just books. You could buy the book Halftime, or you could buy one of my books, From Success to Significance, and work through the questions. And then secondly, we have virtual online groups that meet for a couple of hours a month. And over 6 or 7 months, you'll build a strategy. And if you're young, we have something called Emerging Leaders Roundtable for people that are in their late 20s or 30s that are going to be senior executives one day, but don't want to ruin their life along the way. We help them build out a balance and a strategy to win not only in your finances, but in your faith and in your marriage and in your family and in staying healthy and having a few friends. And believe it or not, with a strategy and looking for ways to overlap and get two for ones, you can actually succeed in all of those areas. And so I have groups going all the time. We do around the world, emerging leader roundtables. And then we have groups for people who are wealthy and give significantly. I do a group every year called the 100X Forum, Lisa, for people who give $1 million a year away. And we limit it to 6 or 7 people. So really just wherever you're at, you know, reach out to halftime.org and we'll find something, even if it's just one-on-one coaching. But the big thing is that a little bit of intentionality in your life goes a long, long way. And most people live without that. They're responding to what's around them and what's coming at them. And so the place where I always start, Lisa, with people in this journey of renewal or reinvention is to ask the question, if your life turned out perfect, what would the elements be? This is a long-term perspective of beginning with the end in mind, like Stephen Covey taught us. And suppose that you and I were sitting on a bench 30 years from now, I'd be 91. And I looked over at you and I said, wow, Lisa, good to see you again. How did it go? And suppose you stopped and you looked off in the distance and you took your time. And then you look back at me and you said, you're not going to believe it. It went perfectly. What would you have to scroll through in the back of your mind to draw that conclusion? Now, if you can get clear on that, then you can begin to build a strategy to get there. Then you can say no to low-value things in your life and focus on the high-value ones. So imagine if any one of your listeners had the answer to two questions. What is your purpose? And if your life turned out perfectly, what would the elements be? That gives you the basic fundamental working ingredients of building a really significant next season of your life.
Yeah, it's so good. I mean, Lloyd, I'm just sitting here thinking, it's a strategic plan for your life. You know, we all have 1, 5, 10-year plans for our businesses, but why aren't we doing that with our life? You know, and if you don't have that plan, that old adage that says you aim at nothing, you're going to hit it every time. I mean, really taking the time. But to your point, you've said it a few times in this conversation, it's intentional. You have to be intentional. You have to take the time to think through that. So, this is so good. Literally, we could just keep talking for hours and hours. I do want to just call out, you know, you've written several books. You and Linda have even written books together, you know, but I know from Success to Significance, When the Pursuit of Success Isn't Enough is your subtitle. Can you like just a couple of stories maybe out of there? I know you talk a lot about stories. You've already given us a few. But in chapter 4, you say, seeing your life from the Goodyear blimp. Can you like dig into that just a little bit? What do you mean by that?
You know, so often we're working in our life trying to be tactical about the constraints we have or, you know, how are we going to plan this next trip? How are we going to, you know, sell this house and buy that one? Which job should I take? And it begs the question that Peter Drucker kept asking my mentor. You know, Drucker was in his 80s and 90s. My mentor was in the 60s. I was in my 30s. Drucker would ask him, to what end? You know, why? Do you want a bigger house and a faster car and more toys and more activities and unending sports activities so that you and your spouse are in different hotels every weekend running kids to different kinds of sports? Why? What kind of family do you want? What's your vision for your family long term? What's your vision for your own life? Who do you want to become? I often ask people, who do you want to be in 10 years? Because Wayne Gretzky taught us you skate to where the puck is going. And so you have to stop long enough to think about your life from the 30,000-foot view, like the Goodyear blimp, and look down on it. It gives you perspective, and it helps you see that the things that seem so big to you are actually quite small, particularly people who are in a corporate setting where they're, you know, inundated with all the intrigue and politics, and very seldom don't realize that when you leave corporate America, there's no wake. You know, when your boat goes through the lake, you know, it leaves waves behind that's called a wake. When you exit corporate America, there's no wake. You might as well get used to that now. Don't count on, you know, there being some big disruptive thing when you finally quit or resign or retire. If your identity is wrapped around being a big shot in some big company, you know, just fly over it one day in your plane when you're trying to land and you'll realize it's a very tiny enterprise. And I was coaching a guy that was running the small business division for United Healthcare. It was about a $9 billion business, I believe. And it was December, and I asked him what he wanted to do. If it was March and he was retired and he'd had a month of rest and he was recuperated, tell me about the perfect day. Where are you and what are you doing? He said, well, I'd be downtown LA because he lives in Glendale, and I'd be mentoring a little Hispanic boy to help him break through the cycle of poverty and get into college and get out and get a great job. And he just waxed eloquently. And so I said to him, well, have you ever met voice like that. And he said, no, but I've read a lot about it. And I said, well, here's your assignment between now and when you leave United Healthcare is to go downtown, spend a day with those guys. So he did. And he called me a few weeks later. You know, the first thing I said, how'd it go? First thing he said is, well, you know, this little boy has never heard of United Healthcare. Of course, he doesn't have healthcare. And it just made his business card and his CEO title irrelevant. Well, the sooner you can get over that, you know, the better off you are. And so to live life from the perspective of the Goodyear blimp is to not stay out of the tactical or strategic, but to take time every year, take time maybe every quarter to get away, a day of silence maybe. I do silent solo retreats, spiritual retreats, 3 times a year. A whole day by myself just to listen to God, listen to my heart, think about what's working and not working. It gives you an opportunity to operate on your life, not down in your life, and to really gain perspective.
That is so good.
And certainly having long-term metrics would be one important way to get a long-term big perspective.
Right. Well, circling back to what you said at the beginning, you know, what are those when you're 93 years old and you look at the perfect day or the perfect life? What were those elements, you know, and defining those, I think, is really important, Lloyd. Well, I tell you what, this has just been so much fun. I have enjoyed this so immensely. And I know that your wisdom, I know that you're going to help our listeners, Lloyd. But I have to ask you, what's the something extra that every leader needs?
I would say a mentor. I can't imagine going through life without a mentor, somebody 15 or 20 years older than me, wiser than me, because they've lived through many things I haven't even thought about, and who's following God, if you're coming from a faith perspective, and has been successful in their life and cares enough about you to tell you the truth. When I started at 12 as a gymnast, I bumped into a Bob Stout, who had been in the 1951 Olympics or 52 Olympics in Helsinki. He was still a world-class gymnast in his 40s. I was 12 years old. I asked him, could you help me do that? He wasn't my coach. He was my mentor. He gave me encouragement. He gave me permission. He gave me perspective. He didn't coach me on the tactical stuff. He was a mentor. And actually, at the state championships, he was one of the 3 judges and gave me the lowest score. He had to give me the lowest score because we were so close. But you know what he taught me has carried with me all the way to this day. He said to me, if you want to be a state champion, you got to decide how badly you want it. And so in gymnastics, you know, you tear the skin off your hands when you try to do a giant swing on the rings or something. You got to decide the next day if you're going to get up on the rings again with big pieces of skin ripped off your hands, or if you're going to chicken out and wait for 10 days for it to heal. And then I had a mentor when I started developing retirement housing. It was a French-Canadian guy that had 27 retirement homes, showed me the ropes. Then Bob Buford was a mentor. And I don't know where he stops and where I start in my thinking. And a mentor gives you permission. They give you perspective and they give you accountability. They give you wisdom. I wouldn't go very far without a mentor.
That's so good. So good. Well, Lloyd, I cannot tell you how much this has just been so helpful to me. You know, so tell our listeners again, and we'll put this in the show notes. But if they are interested in learning more about the Halftime Institute, give us the URL. Tell us how they can get involved, how they can connect.
Yeah, just go to halftime.org, just like football, halftime.org. You're welcome to email me at lloyd.reeb@halftime.org, and I'll get you connected with the right people and the right opportunity that serves you and your community with the amount of time you have. And you'll be on your way to the next season being the very best season of your life.
Very good. Well, Lloyd, thanks again for being on the show today.
Thanks, Lisa. Thanks for all you're doing.
Thank you for listening to today's show. Something Extra with Lisa Nichols is a Technology Partners production. Copyright Technology Partners, Inc., 2019. For show notes or to reach Lisa, visit tpi.co/podcast. Don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you listen.